Welcome to Grid Talk. My name is George Howson, and today we're here to preview the 2024 Miami Grand Prix. Joining me today, we have Grid Talk co-host Tom Downey.
Hello.
And Dwayne Medford.
Hello.
And sports journalist Yagi.
Hi, guys. Good to be here.
Good to have you back, Dev. But before we get into this episode, we must thank our sponsor, BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available for you to follow on your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head over to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Remember to use the promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, where the game starts. And also be sure to follow us on our social media channels at GridTalk UK, everywhere where you can get the at symbol to keep up to date with the show. So there's been quite a bit of news that's been going around. Some people confirmed for other teams, some people rumored to be confirmed for teams. But we'll start with one that has been confirmed, and that is Nico Hülkenberg, who will be going to Sauber, which eventually becomes Audi, for the following year after that. Owain, is this the right move for Hülkenberg and for Sauber/Audi?
I think it's undoubtedly a good move for Hülkenberg. Obviously, he's floundering in a Haas team, which is slightly improved compared to last year, but not particularly great. Whereas he would be moving to, obviously, to Sauber, and then when it changes in 2026 to Audi at their new chassis and engine regs, you know, he's obviously got himself into a work seat, which is you know, no doubt going to be a good thing to him. He's obviously known to the VW group through his small stint winning the 24 Hours of Le Mans for 9 years ago now, in 2015. But yeah, I think that's a net positive move for him. And you know, we could see a rapid change in his fortunes. You know, if Audi are rumoured to have at least had a 2026 spec engine running on the dyno, and it's also fairly similar to what they've been running, to what they've been last running in the World Endurance Championship prior to them leaving. Obviously, diesel. They're moving away from diesel and moving to petrol here. But Audi knows what they're doing when it comes to engines, and I guarantee that Sauber are going to give them a decent chassis. So I think it's, honestly, it's a pretty good move for him, as I say, and as a move for Sauber as well, Sauber and Audi. I think one thing you do get with Nico Hülkenberg is that you do get a driver with a fair amount of pace. He hasn't necessarily been the luckiest. I think he's still one of the drivers. I think he's still a driver who hasn't got a podium yet, which is, you know, for the places he's been with in his career is more embarrassing by the day, unfortunately. But I think that could actually stand them in really good stead, and they've got a solid driver. And obviously, we don't know who they're going to partner with on the other side of the garage. But I think having Nico Hülkenberg there is a pretty good option. I mean, all round, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I am very excited to see what he does at Audi. I think he's had a really, really good season this season so far. He's well and truly put Kevin Magnussen in his place, getting points and top 10 starts, I should say, when that car really probably shouldn't be doing that. So yeah, one driver confirmed for Sauber for next year. And obviously leaves space to be filled at Haas, Tom. And something that I wanted to ask the question was, I mean, he already put himself firmly in the shop window after his, you know, after his last minute appointment at the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. But I think that really, really does give Oli Behrmann a very, very, you know, clear path to Formula One in place of Hülkenberg at Haas.
Oh, definitely, mate. And the Haas team principal, I can't remember his surname, are you come up to? He's even passed on the side of the Williams car, ironically. It's you know, he's made no secrets of how big a fan of Behrmann's he is. And I've made no secret of how big a fan of Behrmann I am as well. And his stand-in performance for Ferrari at Saudi, you know, which is a blinking difficult track. Yeah, that speaks volumes in itself, you know, and you know, he's only like 19 odd. So I think another season of F2 under his belt this season, that will do him the world of good again. You know, he's definitely in the running for the title. If you listen to our sister show, Formula Talk, you plug, you know, well, you know, you'll hear all about it over there. I think he's an absolute, I don't want to say a shoo-in, because knowing me, I'll give it, you know, the old curse, and then he'll get, you know, he'll have a stinker of a season, and then they'll sign someone else or something. But, you know, you would think that he is definitely the preferred option, should we say, for that. I'm trying not to get too carried away, but now that Hülkenberg has sort of freed up that seat, what I suspect we will see is Magnussen retained for another year just to provide some ongoing stability in that team, and have Behrmann come in, Magnussen teach him how to force people off the track left, right and centre and get 20-second penalties, And then Magnussen will leave probably the following year. Behrmann sort of takes over that sort of team leader role. And then he effectively waits his turn for Ferrari because, you know, Hamilton is not going to be there forever. He's definitely in his sort of twilight years of his career, but, you know, still driving just as well. And Leclerc might leave, anything like that, you know. So it's a perfect sort of pathway for Behrmann into F1. This, you know, with Hülkenberg moving to Sauber, you know, going to be under the Audi guys, it's the ideal opportunity for him. And I would be surprised if we don't see that.
Yeah, me too. I think it'll probably be confirmed pretty soon as well. You know, obviously that seat has been vacated. We know that. So it's perfect for him, perfect for Haas as well. Get some fresh blood into the team. So yeah, his you know, kind of gets his path to the full-time Ferrari drive clear. Someone that is leaving Ferrari, though, at the end of this season that we do know about is Carlos Sainz, though, Dev. Now, he's someone who's not yet confirmed. There were some rumours about him potentially going to salvage Audi because of the project there, because of the potential there. That route is potentially closed off now with Hülkenberg going there. But there's a lot of rumours about Sainz going to Red Bull or Mercedes or even Aston Martin. But where do you think he'll end up?
No, it's a bit of a tricky situation concerning the smooth operator of the grid. You know, he's definitely a very bankable talent and fast. I think he's in the prime of his career. He's completely, I won't say completely outperformed, I take my word back, but he's definitely shown the mirror to those detractors at Maranello who perhaps thought that the team was completely about Charles Leclerc and that he was going to be this number two driver. He's definitely not. He's really fighting for his position. And the other day, I was just having a word with another diehard Ferrari fan, and he said that, you know, when you are in your final year and you have nothing to lose, you just go all out. So I think that's the kind of Carlos Sainz we are seeing. That's the kind of Carlos Sainz that his new brand new teams would be wanting to recruit, a driver who, you know, races with absolute abandon and he just goes out there, frontal attack. But it's very hard to put a finger to where he might end up. I think I don't see Lance Stroll, you know, deviating from his stable career path at the moment. So I think the most logical step for Sainz would be perhaps to take up what should be a long-term future instead of a stopgap arrangement, like a 1 year or a 2 year deal at Mercedes, as what those several publications are talking about at this point in time. So I think that leaves us to fathom, to speculate whether Carlos Sainz is actually going to be the other driver next to Nico Hülkenberg. And if that's actually going to be the case, and as Owen rightly said, that they are not going to give him a mediocre chassis by any stretch of the imagination, then definitely he will have to his utilization of a very good team, great support, and let's hope for, you know, a brilliant next half a decade for Carlos Sainz, because a driver of his caliber, 21 podiums, 3 race wins, 2 of them coming challenging street circuits, deserves something incredible. So I think he's going to be pairing Nico Hülkenberg in the near future, although I could be wrong.
It's an interesting thought. And if, you know, if Audi wants to get the best driver lineup possible, because why wouldn't they? It would make sense that he's a very, very good driver, as he has proved this year. You know, he seems to be the only guy that's not driving a Red Bull that's able to win a race. So yeah, very interesting thoughts there. I'll be fascinated to see where he goes. Silly season is well and truly kicked into gear. It has been for some time, to be honest. It has been since January. So yeah, there we go. So yeah, we've talked about some of the people that are moving, and let's actually talk about the race that's coming up, the Miami Grand Prix. This is our third visit here, Owen. We've been here the last 2 years. I think it's fair to say the first two races are potentially have been pretty decent, but I think what rubs people up the wrong way a lot is the whole show around the track. But there must be an audience for it, otherwise they wouldn't do it. So what are your thoughts on the Miami Grand Prix as an event?
I mean, as you say, it's been like a fairly interesting race from you know, that we previously had, and it's been relatively exciting. But I don't think I think the thing that kind of irks a lot of people is that it's not really sort of the purest race somehow. It's a little weird though, because you sort of look at the track layout and it's not dissimilar. I'm going to get some people are going to be calling me sacrilegious for this, you know, or a heathen for this, but you know, it's not actually that dissimilar in some ways to somewhere like Silverstone, with its sort of very flat nature and as much as, yeah, the walls are very, very close, but the actual sort of the types of corners that are there and the way the track is, you know, like I say, they're very similar to other tracks on the calendar. I think it doesn't help that it's in a car park, and, you know, that naturally sort of invites comparison to something like, you know, the Caesars Palace Grand Prix. But obviously this is a far cry from that, and it's put on a big show. I think, I think some of it feels, I think maybe we're used to, actually, I think like the traditional motorsport fan is used to, you know, standing in a field at some far-flung racetrack that's not you know, necessarily, that's not necessarily, you know, well serviced by anything in particular. And, you know, it's wet and it's windy and it's cold. And here we go, we've got the massive show of being, you know, in a fairly sort of metropolitan location, you know, with freeways everywhere. You've got a big stadium where they've put the paddock and you know, and then there's a massive sort of, you know, they've made it sort of a Monte Carlo of the East Coast, you know, on the panhandle of Florida. And I think it almost scares people a little bit, but as a race, I don't think it's, you know, I think it kind of deserves its place on this calendar. You know, it's certainly more exciting and more interesting in some ways than, you know, Monte Carlo, obviously. And I'm going to really, really good fighting a criticism now, but yeah, no, it's definitely a more interesting race than that. But for some reason, it just doesn't seem to even have the pizzazz or just, you know, that je ne sais quoi of even Baku. So I think it deserves a place on the calendar, and it's not going anywhere. You know, it's got a fairly locked-in contract for that, but and particularly with Liberty at the helm. But I don't think it's one that we should be striking off. I think that maybe the issue also is that there's historic tracks like the Nürburgring and Hockenheim, which people would prefer to, or Malaysia, that people would prefer to go back to. I think that's mostly it.
I never thought I'd hear Miami compared to Silverstone, but there we go. So Owain thinks that it needs to, you know, it's kind of, you know, deserving of its place on the calendar. What do you think, Tom? Are you a fan of the Miami track, and have you ever really considered that it's got some similarities with Silverstone?
I haven't, no, and I think, Owain, you're an absolute heathen. So there's your first political heathen for that, obviously. No, it's, you know, I'm going to separate the circuit and the race and the event as two different things, because the race, I kind of actually agree in the sense that it's been decent. You know, obviously both times it has been won by Verstappen, and last year he qualified something like ninth or something because Leclerc binned it in quality again, and then you know, he gets to sort of race through the fields, and I think that was where Perez's sort of like implosion started as well, because he was on pole and then Max overtook him. Yeah, it was good night, Irene. But the race, it's not too bad. I do have some issues with the sort of very short, I think it's like sort of turns 12, 13, where it goes under the motorway. I know it's not about, it's a freeway or a highway or something, or whatever they call it in America. But to us, it's a motorway. And you know, that sort of section there, because I think it was Ocon in 2022, had a really heavy thump into the wall, which looked sort of like something of nothing, where it turned out it was about 38 or 41 G or something like that. And he was, you know, there was a kind of a little sort of whack through the car. And imagine that in this year's Alpine, was, you know, he wouldn't stand much of a chance, would he? So it was, so I have issues with the sort of track layout like that. And then, you know, some things that sort of make me go, oh, really, is when they do things like, they've got the fake marina where they've sort of like painted on like fake water and put boats on. And I get what they're going for, you know, and you said sort of like the Monte Carlo, I was going to say the Middle East, that's not right, that's Abu Dhabi, the Monte Carlo of the East Coast. It's like, yeah, they're kind of going for that. And it's like, you know, if you look at it from above, a sort of like glancing eye, it's like, you know, oh, you know, there are boats in a marina there, but then you take more than like a split second look and you go, that water's not moving. And it just looks a bit sort of like off. In my opinion, the thing that I had a bit of an issue with, not had an issue with, but the thing was sort of like, maybe go, oh, come on, was the whole driver's entry thing that we had last year and the whole sort of shebang that goes with it. Now, I know that, you know, not every race is going to be your sort of purist. Like I said, you know, the sort of hills that, you know, sort of back end of nowhere with, you know, sort of like two, like sort of country B-roads that say where you've got to get, you know, sort of like, you know, sort of like 500 tons of infrastructure up and down in a weekend. It's, you know, that in itself is, you know, we get pure circuits like that, and you know, that's what, you know, that's like your Spa, you know, your Silverstone, you know your Zandvoort. Zandvoort is actually quite well serviced by public transport. That's, you know, that's not the best example, but Miami, you know, like Ryan says, you know, I think it's in downtown Miami, very cosmopolitan area, you know, lots of sort of access is sort of like in the heart of everything, is next to the stadium. This is the thing with Miami, it's appealing to that audience, and it's that sort of like newer audience of people who like the sort of flash and the sort of like the sort of whole show around it, and the racing sort of like almost becomes a side part. The slight issue I have is when drivers are coming out last year saying that it, you know, it like sort of really interrupted their whole sort of like pre-race procedures and all the rest of it. It's like, you know, yes, you know, there is entertainment value, but we are being entertained by something that is a sport, and the sport element should come first. I'm not saying it's not good to have things that are entertaining. That's why we have things like the grid walk and, you know, all the sort of interviews and stuff afterwards. And that doesn't appeal to everyone. Because, for an example, my parents wouldn't sit down and watch Brundle's bit. Well, actually, no, they probably would. But sort of like, you know, all the sort of like interviews before and afterwards, they probably wouldn't watch that kind of stuff. You know, I'm the kind of guy who, you know, I'll watch Ted's Notebook and all the rest of it, you know, that kind of thing. And then seeing this whole sort of like, you know, this sort of like, I don't even know what you'd call it, but, you know, where they had like that big sort of like pretend stage and everything, it felt a bit forced and a bit cheap. And I know some races have some pomp and circumstance, such as Monaco being the most obvious example, you know, the jewel in the crown, all the rest of it. But Monaco it's not tasteless. And I feel that Miami, with this whole event, you know, if we're having the same kind of thing this year, I'm not sure. I fear it may be heading towards being rather tasteless.
Yeah, I totally see where you're coming from with that. I mean, one of the things that I don't really tune in for the grid walk too much with Brundle. I might see the highlights of that later on, but I do actually try and make an effort for Miami, but for the wrong reasons, because some of the people that he has a habit of finding on that grid are rather eccentric. I'll put it like that. I'll be politically correct with it. But yeah, so Dev, what are your thoughts on the Miami Grand Prix? Are you glad it's on the calendar, or do you think, like Tom says, it's just a bit much, it's a bit fake?
I, for one, am no fan of having three races in America for some particular reason. I don't know why. I really think that, in all likelihood, this is in the years to come, it might just well be another Max Verstappen Grand Prix. So that in itself, I mean, with much due respect to this heroic figure of Formula One, this really eccentrically talented driver. I mean, unless and until we have the two leading constructors, barring Red Bull, picking up a great fight with the constructor world championship leader, this is going to be a mundane Grand Prix. I didn't quite enjoy, you know, the last year's race, to be honest. And I think it's when you talk about the track, the quality, the nature of the track on the whole, then it definitely has some swelling elements. I think corners 8 to 11, turns 8 to 11 rather, gives drivers an incredible chance for overtaking. You have a particularly long back straight, which is interesting. I think turn one is fairly Austrian Grand Prix-like, you know, slow moving, and then you have a great chance to overtake there in that stretch after turn one. But I think unless, as I said, Red Bull find the other teams, for example, Aston Martin or Ferrari, picking up a great fight with them, it's going to be a fairly straightforward or maybe even yawn-inducing Grand Prix. But then I think it's just the kind of track where the McLarens would want to bounce back, particularly for the reason that I think last year they had a very disappointing result. And Lando Norris in particular would be really wanting to bounce back now that he also has great form. Back-to-back podiums, two podiums on the bounce recently, should inspire him to put a strong fight in. But ultimately, yeah, he has to see who can put up a fight to bring Max Verstappen. Otherwise, we have a straightforward race weekend back here.
I think you're spot on there, Dev. I think it's one of them circuits, and we saw it a little bit last year after Max got into the lead. It's one of them circuits where if it's not a great race, if it's just cars just driving around for the most part, doing as fast as lap times as they can, it is not the most exciting track to watch. But it can produce some good racing. We saw that in 2022, but let's hope for some more of that rather than what we saw last year. Yeah, let us know on the socials what you guys think of the Miami Grand Prix. Is it a good track? Is it not? How many stars would you give it out of 5? Well, not sure about that. But if you want to give us 5 stars, you can head over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify and give us a 5-star rating on there. And that would be very much appreciated there. And if you're one of the 72% of people that aren't yet subscribed to the YouTube channel, please do consider helping us out with a like and subscribe on there. We'll be going out live shortly after the sprint race and the Grand Prix itself on YouTube. So yeah, that's the first place where you can catch the podcast before any of the audio platforms. But yeah, so we've talked about the Miami Grand Prix. We've talked about some drivers that are definitely moving. Now let's talk about probably the most influential person in Formula One who isn't a driver, Adrian Newey. Now, it's been very, very strongly rumoured to the point where it's been published in BBC, in Autosport, probably some other very big publications as well, that Adrian Newey is going to leave Red Bull after this season. It's not been confirmed by Adrian Newey himself. It's not been confirmed by the teams. But apparently these publications have it on high authority that it's going to happen. So there's no smoke without fire. It looks like it's going to happen. Owain, where do you think he's going to go? And what kind of impact is this going to have on Red Bull? Because even though he only works part-time for them officially, you can definitely see his influence on the car over the last few years.
I mean, I'll start with the impact. I think the impact will be sort of quite wide-reaching. We saw that as he stepped away prior to this, you know, the form of the Red Bull dropped, sort of thing. You know, I think the sort of, you know, if he doesn't see where we can add value, he doesn't tend to sort of kind of do so much. Adrian Newey is a kind of easier particular character. He's probably one of the last of the old guard as well of car designers. You know, obviously he's been around so long that, you know, he's, I mean, we could, you know, he's been at Leighton House and McLaren and, you know, Red Bull, and I think, you know, I'm forgetting somewhere, but somewhere else big as one of the designers, Williams, as Tom Downey's hopefully let me know. And as a total, the cars that he's designed have won sort of 25 combined 25 drivers and constructors world championships. So let's call that I think it's 13 drivers championships, which is something like, you know, a sixth of all that have been, you know, contested, which is amazing, you know, given the kind of career he's had and how long he's had it. But yeah, like I say, he's old school. He doesn't use CAD. He's tried to use CAD and doesn't really. But what he does is he designs, and he's got, I won't do the full quote, but that guy can see is the quote from, I can't remember who, about Adrian Newey. And it seems to be true. He just understands seemingly how to design a very fast racing car. I think where he would go, I think that would leave Red Bull a bit headless almost. He can sort of bring the broad concepts together and the design team do the rest really and take that and sort of flourish with it. I think that, so without that mind at the top, you struggle to find that visionary mind who can take what's possible in carbon fiber or you know, all the other materials that F1 cars use, what's possible in carbon fiber and packaging and all the sort of and that sort of thing with the mechanics of the car, and then also, you know, putting that into something that will actually be, you know, very quick within the rules. I think that's going to be difficult for Red Bull to replace that creativity. Now, it's where he would go is difficult to understand, is difficult to work out, because we saw that we've seen just through a couple of his side projects, you know, with Aston Martin, with the Valkyrie hypercar and the racing car that went along with, well, sorry, not the racing car, but the souped up version that didn't quite make it to racing and then is coming to racing. And you know, as he stepped away from that project, as the relationship between Aston Martin and Red Bull went away, he's gone and done the RB17, which is going to be a road car by Red Bull Advanced Technologies, I believe. But clearly he's also looking for some kind of extracurricular challenge, I'll call it. And you've got to think of the people who can give him that. So we've got Rinaldi. It's going to be a road car manufacturer, not a road car manufacturer, but someone with big bucks, so it will be a manufacturer. Clearly it's going to, you know, immediately you think of McLaren, you think of Ferrari, and you think of maybe Audi as the other places that he can go. And of the three, I'm of the opinion that Ferrari is probably where he would go. It's early enough in the season that he would have a gardening leave period that would allow him to get in at the right point to be able to do both the Formula One team at Ferrari and also move on to their next sort of halo car leading on, you know, from the LaFerrari. So I think that's the right time for them. It's the right time for him. This is, you know, the timing is curious, but also it makes sense.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I think Ferrari's his most likely destination. I did listen to his book, How to Build a Car, which if you've not done, I mean, we're not doing promo on here, but that is an excellent book if you've not read or listened to it yet. I think he actually turned down Ferrari in the early 2010s, and maybe he regrets that. Maybe he potentially regrets that. And you've got to think that whatever move he does now, he's 65 years old, whatever move he does now is probably going to be his last one. And you think that the most successful, historic, prestigious team in the history of Formula One, with, you know, the most successful driver, Lewis Hamilton, with someone who could potentially go on to get many championships and many, many wins in Charles Leclerc, would be a very attractive prospect. But as of now, we don't know who it is. We don't know which team it's going to be. But yeah, definitely an interesting one. And Tom, as well, this has also reignited the rumours of Max Verstappen leaving Red Bull. And you can sort of understand it in a sense, especially with, you know, the lead guy, the designer, the person who created that absolute monster of a car he's got now, the absolute monster of a car that he had last year. But Verstappen does have a long contract until, I think, 2027. So is it realistic that he could move on from Red Bull with Adrian Newey?
I could see it. And, you know, one of the things that I read was apparently, you know, if Max leaves Red Bull, Helmut Marko is potentially going with him as well, which, to be honest, if Helmut Marko left us, that'd be great. You know, I don't think that's going to happen, sadly. And I do say that as a Max fan somewhat. If Newey doesn't go into Ferrari, which, I've got to be honest, apologies for the double negative, I don't think that will happen. So in a roundabout way, I think Newey will go to Ferrari. But I think, just hypothetically speaking, if he was to go to someone like Mercedes, and if Mercedes were then able to sort of like basically raid the Red Bull house, so they took Max, they took Marco, and they took Newey, that could make, you know, certainly turn Mercedes back into the tour de force that it certainly used to be, you know, even so much as a couple of seasons ago. And that's one thing I have heard floating around. But I think realistically, you know, Max, he's obviously not entirely content with what's going on at Red Bull. And so he just wants to drive the car. He doesn't want to get involved in any of the, you know, the sort of like bitter politics or all the rest of it. But sadly, you know, sometimes drivers' names do get sort of dragged into things. And, you know, proverbially speaking, when mum and dad are fighting, you look to, you know, sort of go elsewhere because he's, you know, he's got to sort of do what's best for him. You know, he is the hottest driver on the grid. He is the dominant force at the moment. And I know that that might sort of irk some people. And, you know, I'm not sitting here saying, oh, he's the best driver of all time, because he's not. You know, that driver is arguably sitting on the grid right now, heading to Ferrari next year. Yes, I said that, and I mean it. You know, statistically, he is. You know, and you know, you can't deny it. But you know, Max is the informed driver, and any team would probably love to have their hands on him. Just say in the same way that Newey is, you know, the name in aerodynamics. Oh, and you said it yourself. You know, there's the sort of slightly paraphrased quote that he can see air, and that is so true with Newey. So those two will be in hot demand, whether they go to the same place, whether they go to different places. Well, if Newey's going to Ferrari, they're obviously not going to the same place. Could you imagine, though, if, you know, if Max, Lewis, well, ended up at Ferrari, oh, my words, you know, and then, oh, God, imagine if Ferrari had a dominant car, blinking heck, that would be a Netflix off a field day. But, yeah, you know, it's, as for myself, I see he is, like, the sort of biggest, sort of, like, the sort of like biggest chess piece in this whole sort of like game of chess that we've got going on in F1 at the moment. And I know that's a weird analogy, but I hope you know what I mean. And, you know, there are rumours that he's meeting with Mercedes, or, you know, his sort of management are meeting with Mercedes, I think, at the Miami Grand Prix or after Miami. So let's not forget, there's no smoke without fire. And it's one thing, you know, for sort of like, you know, like a random Twitter account or X or whatever they're called this week to come out and say, you know, say this or that. And, you know, social media and, you know, sort of like news breaking that way, you know, you've got to take a lot of it with a pinch of salt. But this is the kind of thing, it has been sort of gaining a fair bit of traction. So, you know, this is how the Hamilton rumour started. Let's not forget that. Whether Max should actually move to Mercedes, because he's going to want to know that he's going to a team that's going to be able to give him a good car. Because, you know, let's face it, the Merc has some inherent issues. And, you know, they've lost their 7-time champion. Yeah, so it's not straightforward. And if Max does leave Red Bull for anyone, I think Sainz will be in that Red Bull seat.
I think you're right. I think you're spot on. If Max does leave, I think Carlos Sainz is the standout candidate to replace him. But yeah, fascinating silly season is something else this season. It really is. I'll be very interested to see how it kind of plays out. Something that's been talked about in the wake of the Chinese Grand Prix, there's going to be some sort of meeting going on between the powers that be in Formula One, and one of the things that they're going to talk about is extending the point system, Dev. And it's something that Nico Rosberg has come out and said is not right. I've had a pretty passionate rant on Fun Chronicle saying that I am not a fan of it. They've not gone into detail about how these new points will be, but the long and short of it is, instead of it being the top 10 for Grand Prix, it's going to be the top 12. Is this the right move for Formula One? Are you a fan of them potentially increasing this, or do you think it's fine the way it is?
George, truth be told, I support this idea. And if this was indeed to come true, at least in our lifetime, which I think it might, because, you know, you want the newer generations, the newer audiences to be glued onto the sport the way the present generation and the present audiences are. I think it augurs well for the growth of the sport. It augurs the best, first and foremost, for the psychology of the drivers, for the motivation of the drivers and the teams. For example, let me divide the clock back to the event where Logan Sargeant scored his debut Formula One points, which actually happened last year at COTA, Circuit of the Americas, at his home race. There was almost a chance where he would not have scored that point. But there are always these races where the P11 or the P12 does phenomenal job. For example, Alex Albon, particularly in the middle part of the last season, starting from Canada, was in great form. He did some amazing P7, P8 drives, and then suddenly he fell back towards the latter stage of the last World Championship to the rear end of the field. But he was still delivering great lap times as compared to the teammate. He was battling hard with Kevin Magnussen's and the Hulkenbergs of the world. And then suddenly you realize that despite finishing 11th or 12th, you don't even have a solitary point to your name. That somewhere hurts. For example, imagine the predicament of the most polarizing driver on the grid at this point in time, which to me is Daniel Ricciardo. So he still has his fans, and there are still those who don't want him to be on the grid anymore. He's already finished 11th once this year, unless I'm very much mistaken. So if he was to get, for example, 2 points or I don't know. I don't know what the point scoring system is going to be. If he was to get even half a point, he can somewhere hope of building on or just elongating the trajectory of Formula One. And he would certainly feel that, you know, he has that extra bit of motivation. And the fact that you drive a competitive race, you don't really have a fast car, a car that is fast enough, I beg your pardon, and you finish with no points whatsoever. But with the new point scoring system, if the points were filtered further down and they were stretched to the guy who's P15, for example, definitely helps the ones who feel that they missed out on Q1. Don't you think? Just my humble 2 cents.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. It's a tough one. I do get the point that, you know, these drivers should be rewarded for their efforts, but at the same time, we've got half the grid getting points every race, and obviously they still get, you know, the accolade of getting 11th. Whatever, that can still be used for a tiebreaker if points are level. So I don't know. I'm not a fan of it personally. I do get the people that think there's a point to it. I do understand that, especially with how reliable the cars are at the moment. But yeah, that's one that's probably going to come in. That's probably going to get decided for next year pretty soon, as are more sprint races. But that's another topic for another day. So yeah, we've given some predictions for where we think team personnel and where drivers are going to go. Now let's give some predictions for the Miami Grand Prix. So Wayne, can you please give me your sprint winner, because this is another sprint weekend, your podium and your pole position for this weekend?
Oh, I'm going to be so, so boring. You know what? You know, I'm going to go with Carlos Sainz to be the sprint winner. That's what I'm predicting. And then, because I'll be honest, I can see him being better than Leclerc again. And then, I mean, with the Grand Prix, I just think it's going to be the inevitable, you know, Verstappen and then Perez, and then we'll be, you know, sorting out who's going to be third in that. So I think maybe it's going to, you know, I'll go with Sainz for third in the Grand Prix. I just don't see Red Bull relenting at this point.
Yep, fair enough. Tom, what's your top three, your sprint winner and your pole position for the weekend?
My pole position is going to be, I'm going to be boring. I'm going to say Max. I think he's going to say pole. That's for the Grand Prix. The sprint winner, I think Sainz is a good shout, like Owen said. But I think I'm going to throw it out there a little bit. This could also be my pole prediction. Fernando Alonso. That's going to be a very, very fancy build prediction for the sprint win. As for the Grand Prix, I think it's going to be a Red Bull 1-2 with Max on top and Checo behind. And then as for third, I'm going to say Leclerc will be third.
Okay, fair enough. No Lando Norris in there, Tom, for an even win this weekend.
No.
Nope. Do you really want to explain why?
Yeah, so Tom Horrocks was on the Muxy podcast. It was on Friday. So on Friday, I was up in London and I popped in to see Mr. Horrocks on my way, you know, to meet, you know, see him and the family and meet Horrocks Jr. And we were chatting, Tom and I were sitting there chatting, and we were, of course, we were chatting about F1. And I said, Lando won't win a race. And I said, he's already bottled it, you know, not just this season, but he bottled it, you know, twice in 2021, you know, certainly once, arguably twice. And on the sort of, you know, the a bold prediction show we did last year, I said Piastri would win a race before Lando, and I was right. Now, I'm saying race. I'm not saying Grand Prix. I'm saying race. So, you know, so sprints counted for that. So Mr. Horrocks has come up with a bet that if Lando does win a race, he will shave his head. And if... If Lando does win a race, I have to shave my head. And if Lando does not win a race, Mr. Horrocks will shave his head. Now, I think this is slightly unfair, because if you look at my hair compared to his, I've got a lot more to lose. And, there is sort of like that element. Mr. Horrocks, the bet is on.
Challenge accepted. It's official. So there we go. So one of the two Toms will be a cue ball at some point. Even if it's the end of the season, it's going to happen. So there we go. That's the grid talk bet for 2024. And I'm very happy I'm not involved this year. I'm not going to lie.
Mate, you had it easy with a sombrero, okay?
I did. I could just take the sombrero off after that. Well, that will stay with whoever loses that bet for a good month, maybe two. That's not how long it takes to grow back. So yeah.
It could be winter too as well by the time. Like we could be in sort of... We could be in, you know, late September, early
October. One of us is going to have a really cold head.
Maybe November.
Just in time for my 30th. What did you get for your 30th, Tom? A skinhead.
Well, it's more for Christmas as well. Why were you? What happened to your hair this year? Oh, it's a long story. anyway, so that'll be fascinating to see how that pans out. Dev, what are your predictions for the weekend? Your winner, your sprint winner, and your top three, your sprint winner, and your pole position for the weekend.
George, I don't think I have the most imagination rattling answer to that one. The top three for the sprint, I think, would be Max Verstappen, without a doubt. He'll take pole. eventually he may just go on to grab the win as well, followed by, I think, Lando Norris and Charles Leclerc. I think that's my top three. But you said, you asked the other question, is the pole sitter for the Grand Prix. I think that would be Verstappen. It's a no-brainer. It's a track where he's habitually winning. He's won two races already. He would definitely want to clinch a hat-trick, the third round of bouts. And who can stop him? Maybe Fernando Alonso. If at all that would happen, it would be amazing. But yeah, definitely, I think the Red Bull are going to dominate once again.
That would be pretty incredible if Alonso managed that. That would be a very bold prediction. But yeah, let's get into the bold predictions. We've not given them yet. Wayne, what's yours for the weekend?
My bold prediction is Mercedes get a podium. There you go.
Ooh, pretty unlikely looking at the moment, I must be honest. Is that in the sprint or just the Grand Prix itself?
Any podium. Any podium whatsoever.
Any podium.
Not including getting first, second, you know, pole, second or third in qualifying. We got, not included that. That's the lengths we have to stretch it to for Mercedes right now.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Pretty unlikely. Tom, what's your bold prediction?
Alonso wins the sprint.
You did give that one early on, to be fair. That is pretty bold.
Yeah, it's more bold than one of our heads is going to be at the end of the year.
That's what it's going to be. It's not the bold prediction. It's the bold prediction.
Yeah, you got what I was going for.
Who's going to be bold by the end of the year?
I think we can get a graphic for that at some point.
Aiden, make it happen. Make it happen, mate.
Please.
Dev, you said your predictions were a bit unimaginative. Let's try and expand your horizons here. Let's go for something that's unlikely to happen, a bold prediction.
I couldn't get clean bold for saying this one, but I think Ricciardo scores his first points of the season.
Unfortunately, right now, that is a bold prediction. It absolutely is, yeah. So those are our predictions. Yeah, just want to give our panelists a chance to plug our outlets. Dev, I mentioned that you're a sports journalist. Where can we see written pieces from you?
Well, I have the pleasure of authoring some pieces on F1Chronicle.com, which I also have the pleasure of having co-founded half a decade back. And you can also read some of my work on Kairosports.com. That's KYROSPORTS.com.
Yeah, Dev's a fantastic writer, so definitely go and check out those articles on those sites. Tom, do you want to give a word about our sister show?
Yes, absolutely. So listeners to this show may or may not know that I co-host Formula Talk alongside the lovely Sophia Richmond. She and I discuss all things F2, F3, F1 Academy, and we have a little dabble in IndyCar every now and again, especially with the upcoming Indy 500 next month. So yeah, it's the home of most things motorsport, open cockpit, that is not Formula One, basically.
Yeah, definitely check those guys out. Fantastic show. And they've just done a little recap of the F2 and F3 season that's gone live on our audio channels. Speaking of social medias and forms where you can see us, Owain, where can you see more from Grid Talk?
Yeah, if you'd like to keep up to date with anything that's happening, so, you know, if the show is delayed, I mean, it's quite late at night for Miami, for example, if we get, like, you know, an untimely or a long red flag or anything like that, or you just need general updates or want to engage with the show, then you can talk to us, Grid Talk UK, on all of the social media services with the app.
Yep, cheers for that. Yeah, I mean, the shows this weekend should be coming out on Sunday, 11:30 p.m., UK time, and qualifying should be 10:30 p.m. UK. Sprint race. I'm still used to doing qualifying. So for the sprint race, it'd be 6:30 p.m. on Saturday. Those would be our two shows this weekend. And if you want to see some more from me, you can head over to footballchronicle.com. That's FUTBOL, spelled the Spanish way, or F1 Chronicle. I also do some content on this, mainly videos these days. But yeah, I want to thank my panelists for joining us this week, as always. It was a great show, lads. Really enjoyed it.
No pleasure, as always. Sorry, scrambling for the mute button.
Yeah, that's a pleasure.
Fantastic, yeah. And like I said, yeah, we'll be back on Saturday with the sprint show, 6:30 p.m. UK time. That is 1:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time over in the US, local time for the track. And yeah, thank you very much for listening to the Grid Talk podcast presented by Bets Online, and goodbye.